here we are at EAA Radio, Attitude Adjustment. My co-host, Rob Mark, and I am Amy Laboda. It's a beautiful day in Wisconsin.
Is it ever not a beautiful day in Wisconsin?
Yeah, there have been, that you've basically gotten every single type of possible weather this week at
true.
EAA Air Venture 2016. So for all of you who are coming in today, you are getting the best of it. There is no question about that.
And leave extra time. The traffic is bad.
The traffic is bad. You got that right. But that's good. If the traffic is
bad,
that's good for the air show. We have a new guest. We have with us Rick Perry, who is the Vice President of Government and Industry Affairs for the Aircraft Electronics Association. Now, the AEA is a very interesting association, and there have been so many things going on with aircraft electronics, particularly this shift from experimental electronics to being STC'd for certified airplane. Rick, what's going on here?
The first thing is your initial comment is where it shifted.
The shift.
Okay. So everybody looks at it and goes, oh, well, this product has got this legacy and life cycle in experimental aircraft. Therefore, it must be an experimental equipment, which is true until it becomes approved under the STC. And now it's certified equipment. Okay? So the STC is the certification for this. So when we talk about the EAA STC, brilliant piece of work, it actually certifies the avionics equipment that was previously used for experimental and light sport airplanes.
What does it really mean, though? I mean, I fly an experimental. One of the reasons I chose to fly an experimental was I wanted a glass cockpit, and it was the only way I could afford it.
It's what it means fundamentally. It is absolutely industry changing in its application. EAA took the risk, took the vision, moved forward with it. And it was a brilliant move. What it does is the FAA has been working on what's called a safety continuum. And if you've been into any of the FAA presentations on Part 23, you'll see this slide used in Washington, which is where I'm based. We see this slide on a regular basis whenever the FAA is giving a briefing, that it's putting the cost of certification and the validation depth of certification at the appropriate level for the appropriate risk. In other words, a two-place airplane would have somewhat lesser burden than the latest 787, okay? We don't need to certify a Piper Cub to a 787 level. It's that safety continuum that's being applied now to parts as well. So when you look at the STC, the STC comes with limitations, and so it's bridging the top end of experimental and light sport airplanes into the bottom end of 23. So it perpetuates that continuum from experimental through light sport up through Part 23. And so the reality is that most of these products we're talking about will probably make have a market in Class 1, which is the smaller single-engine piston aircraft.
What's the trick in terms of taking a product that's on the experimental side now and making it through the STC process? Is it a year? Is it lots of paperwork? Is it testing? Or how does it go from that experimental side to the?
It depends on the product, and it depends.
Could you give us an example?
Well, sure. If I was doing something as simple as an air gizmo mount for a portable piece of equipment, okay? I have two simple demonstrations of compliance, one for structural integrity, because it's not a mount, it's a stowage device.
Fascinating.
You know, but its intended purpose is to hold a piece of portable equipment in place for takeoff, landing, and turbulence. So you've got the 3G requirements in all directions. And then flammability, because it is plastic. So the demonstration of compliance, that's very, very simple, all right? Which is why you see a lot of those in airplanes that have been done under either minor alteration or even a field approval in a lot of cases. And it's a very straightforward approach, and it's a very simple demonstration of compliance. When you go into something such as EAA with the attitude indicator, intended function's a little bit different. It's a required equipment for IFR flight. It needs to meet certain parameters. It's electronic, so you got to make sure that the software doesn't lead to misleading information. And the depth of certification becomes much more complex. I'm not privy to all the details that EAA did by any means, but my expectation is that they spent the better part of a year putting this package together and demonstrating with the help of the manufacturer, and I've worked with Dynon for a number of years, a very, very well-organized organization with a quality system that supports those elements that are necessary in order to show demonstration.
Well, it really broke open things because Garmin came right after them, didn't they?
They did, and that's what I expect to see. I expect to see that bridge between the experimental community, and I mean the top end. You're not going to see, Rick's widget shop producing something in my basement this year, rolling it out because it, makes coffee in the cockpit for me, and be able to immediately bridge into 23. You're not going to see that fast track, if you will. But what you will see is that products that have longevity, that have demonstrated their effectiveness, their compliance into the experimental light sport market, being able to bridge themselves into the bottom end of 23. But with that comes limitations. Okay? And that's the other side of this is that when you look at the manufacturers, why are they doing this or that? Well, they tend to focus on a larger market. And if you're only producing something for the class one aircraft, while it's a lot of aircraft, there's not a lot of sales. And so you just don't have the market there. So they typically, when they produce something, they'll produce it for class one, two, and three, which is the twins and single turboprop. And kind of go backwards compatible with that. And what this is intended to do is being upward compatible. And it's just simply building a bridge between the two systems.
How is that going to affect the price? Let's just take a typical, whatever that widget thing was you mentioned before, and it was in the experimental class and it cost X amount of dollars. By the time it makes it into a class one aircraft through the STC, how do you think that's going to change the price to the end user?
Generally speaking, it's going to be a percentage higher. It could be 25% higher because there's a cost with the STC, and the applicant has to be able to recover the cost of the STC as a result of that. So you're not going to see, this widget is, at this supplier for $500, so I'm going to be able to buy this for $500 and put it in my airplane. No, realistically, it's probably, if there's enough of a market to it, it's probably $750 or so. But we could have done this all along. Okay, there's really the regulations that were used to do this aren't new regulations. They've been there the whole time.
Fascinating.
I was just going to say the same thing.
But because it wasn't STC, it wasn't a multi-model STC, it wasn't a mass market STC, the individual who chose to put this in the airplane would have been required to bore the additional cost, which would double the cost, if not triple the cost of these products, and just realistically make them non-competitive with certified equipment.
So then what did get it going? I mean, you mentioned that it...
Philosophy. Philosophy. It's the safety continuum that the agency and their leadership has been promoting now for a number of years. Finally hit to the right engineer that was willing to take the risk at the FAA and to take this philosophy forward. And it was aligning the moons. It literally was. And without getting too deep into the regulations, because that usually puts everybody to sleep. But under 21.8 in the regulations, part 21, paragraph 21.9, it talks about replacement parts, and it talks about the methods of approval for replacement parts. TSO is one of them, PMA is one of them, and those are the ones we typically see for mass marketed products. And then there's four other, I believe there's six different levels in there. There's no new rules there. Those rules have been there all along. But there was an assumption that, oh, well, if there's a TSO, you must do the TSO. Well, no, that's not true. There's nothing in the regulation that says you must do a TSO unless the regulation requires the product to be TSO. Under the Part 23 rewrite, everybody talks about the consensus standards ASTM.
Yeah.
Well, ASTM had just finished a validation standard that allowed EAA to use this validation standard, which is a simplified standard for this category of product, as an AC, if you will, or an acceptable means of compliance. So they were able to use some of the new tools that we've just introduced in the last 12 months.
That puts it all together for me. And what I believe is probably going to happen is we've now seen two different manufacturers. I'm guessing there's people right behind them lined up thinking they're going to do this too.
Well, and you know, EAA has already announced that they intend to move forward with other products.
Terrific.
I'm quite sure that AOPA will. And it's totally appropriate for the user associations, AOPA, EAA, to be the catalyst for that. You know, AEA represents, you know, the manufacturers and shops.
Sure.
Our shops have been using this protocol for as long as I've been in aviation.
We've been
putting products, you know, quote, non-certified products, we've been certifying them in business aircraft, the entertainment systems, and all those other things. For decades.
Yeah.
All we did is applied it now to a different class of product.
That's just brilliant. Where can people find you in the hangars?
Well, we're over in Hangar B. It looks like booth 2035.
Okay.
And, you know, we've got the pilot's guide. We've got the avionics news.
Right.
A lot of these things are discussed in both of those magazines this month.
Excellent.
Those are there. And also have to mention that we do have our $1,000 ADSB drawing and giveaway this.
Fabulous. So people need to get by your booth.
Well, it's $1,000 a day.
Wow. $1,000 a day.
You know.
All right. You heard it here first. Rick Perry, Vice President of Government and Industry Affairs for the Aircraft Electronics Association. Thank you so much for taking the time to come by and explain it all to us at EAA Radio. Have a great show.
Thank you. You do the same.